Harpist Grace Williams plays Hiraeth, the Welsh word for longing, a composition full of longing for that beautiful land. Longing is an experience which does go deeper than desire. It also doesn't have the pejorative connotations of desire, which so often suggests lust. Longing should also be free of envy, and it tends, not surprisingly, to be long-term, too. There's often a sadness about longing because it's unrequited. St. Bernard of Clairvaux said the longing to love God with all our heart and strength will not be perfectly fulfilled this side of death. But did St. Bernard mean that longing to love God was futile because we would never achieve it in this life? On the contrary, we'll hear that it is the very act of longing which sustains those who long for God during the times that inevitably arise when they doubt or even lose their faith. In his book, Befriending Our Desires, the theologian and former Jesuit Philip Sheldrake speaks of deepest desire rather than longing. And he says we should long so fervently that we enter into those desires.
There are several characteristics present in the experience of moving from many desires to deepest desire, out of which we seek to make life choices. One important feature that people talk about is a deep and lasting contentment beyond transient pleasure. The place of deepest desire is one where you know that you are touching a deep well of peace and truthfulness that speaks of infinity, even if you have passed through disturbance and pain on the way. It is also a place where we engage with what we ultimately realize is intimately associated with our identity. That is why choices made in this place are to do with life directions rather than with the relatively trivial. Our capacity for commitment is engaged. To be even momentarily in our centre, the place of deepest desire, is not necessarily an emotionally intense experience. However, ultimately it is recognised as an encounter with our own spirit and also with what we call God.
Philip Sheldrake also says it's important to distinguish deep desire from wants and to befriend those desires. Why does he say befriend them? Well, because we're often afraid of our desires, worried that they will lead us astray. But the text of this 16th century motet, composed by Tomás Luis de Victoria, says, "I will hasten hither and thither, I will seek as my soul desires."
Thank you.
I will seek as my soul desires. But then we have to be sure we're seeking or longing for what we really desire in our innermost self, because there may well be good reason to fear less deep desires. Listen to the plight of Phèdre in Jean Racine's tragedy of that name, trapped by her desire for her stepson.
My sickness began much earlier. That day I married Theseus in Athens. The moment the ceremony was over, that moment of the surest happiness I had ever felt in my life, suddenly he was there, standing in front of me. He had simply appeared, staring at me, the man created to destroy me. Before I could grasp what I'd seen, I felt my face flame crimson, then go numb. My whole body scorched, then icy sweat. My eyes went dark. I could not speak. I could hardly stay upright. I knew then the goddess Venus had found me, the latest in the lineage that she loathes. I had fallen into her furnace, and I was trapped. I tried to appease her. My prayers were incessant. I built her a shrine. I spent half my wealth to decorate it. From dawn to dusk I sacrificed beasts, searching their bodies for my sanity. Futile placebo for a fatal illness. And the incense I burned, equally futile. All useless. Whenever I prayed and bowed down to her image, I saw only his. I adored only his. Though I made the air shake with her titles, my whole heart and soul, my whole body, worshipped only him. Hippolytus. Then I began to avoid him. But that was useless too. I met him everywhere. In the face of his father, everywhere, I saw him staring at me through his father's features. So then I turned against him. I turned against myself, to defend myself. I forced myself to make his life a misery. At last, I went the whole way and drove him into exile.
In this short poem, the medieval mystic Hadovich compares those desires which ultimately make us unhappy with the sublime love, but that, she does believe, can be fulfilled in this life.
Through desires of unquiet love, the soul can win no repose. And through desires of strong love, it loses repose and inner quiet. So it drowns in sublime love. And so it finds its unattainable desire nearby. For anyone in misery cannot find contentment unless desire can be fulfilled. For desire comes from such a lofty nature, it cannot be at rest in any small thing.
Our deepest desires are often expressed in a longing for peace or rest. As St. Augustine famously said, "Lord, I am restless until I rest in thee." But then there's that strange saying of Jesus about coming to bring division, not peace. And then Jesus went on to talk about fathers against sons, mothers against daughters, and mothers-in-law against daughters-in-law. Certainly the history of the Church has been a history of divisions, not a history of peace. But that cannot mean that we shouldn't desire peace. It may mean we should long for it in the knowledge that our longing will not be perfectly fulfilled in this life. In this Jewish folk song written by David Shimony are the words, "Endlessly will I wander to find peace for my wounded soul." Sister Cecilia Goodman of the Congregation of Jesus has said longing is the best way to describe prayer during the nights of the Spirit, which so many who long for God pass through. In a lecture with the title Crisis of Faith, Danger or Opportunity, she said,
"It is as if, simultaneously, we are able to say, I don't know if I believe in God, even I don't believe in God, and yet God is all I really live for." This may not make much sense to those that have not chosen this journeying, and often makes little sense to those of us who have. And yet I think in some deep, wise place within us, we know the truth of it. This longing is now the primary element of our response to God. Yet we hardly know what is going on, and seldom value the ache within us enough to call it prayer. And that, perhaps, is our downfall. Simply because we do not value the longing, we do not stay with it long enough to explore it or understand it. If we can take the time to understand it a little more, we begin to find encouragement. Literally, the courage to stay, to pursue this unfamiliar form of prayer that seems to be all we are able for. Gradually, we will begin to trust the longing a little more, to find within the ache of it and the darkness some glimmers of hope, of peace, and of light. Never enough, we feel, but enough to keep us there. And that is all that matters.
Herbert Howells' setting of Psalm 42, "Like as the heart desireth the water brooks, so does my soul desire thee, O God." Philip Larkin was not a poet renowned for longing for God. And yet this sensitive poem about an elderly woman longing for her youth clearly shows that he appreciated the sense of loss, the longing for something missing, which is part of all our experience, something we all have to live with. Perhaps it could be said, although I'm not sure Larkin would agree, that love replaces God as the missing thing in this poem.
She kept her songs. They took so little space. The covers pleased her. One bleached from lying in a sunny place. One marked in circles by a vase of water. One mended when a tidy fit had seized her and coloured by her daughter. So they had waited, till in widowhood she found them, looking for something else, and stood, relearning how each frank, submissive chord had ushered in word after sprawling hyphenated word, and the unfailing sense of being young spread out like a spring-woken tree, wherein that hidden freshness sung, that certainty of time laid up in store, as when she played them first. But even more, the glare of that much-mentioned brilliance, love, broke out, to show its bright incipience sailing above, still promising to solve and satisfy and set unchangeably in order. So, to pile them back, to cry, was hard. Without lamely admitting how it had not done so then, and could not now.
Steve Butler, the pop singer turned Anglican priest, has said, "Much of our longing is actually for our childhood. And yet in our childhood we were not innocent of longing, especially those of us who were sent to boarding schools." Charlotte Bronte described our longing in her poem Homesickness, in which she imagines herself as the homesick young son of the Duke of Wellington.
"Of college I am tired. I wish to be at home, far from the pompous tutor's voice and the hated schoolboy's groan. I wish that I had freedom to walk about at will, that I no more was troubled by my Greek and slate and quill. I'm shivering in the daytime and shivering all the night. I'm called poor, startled, withered wretch and miserable wight. And oh, I miss my brother. I miss his gentle smile, which used so many long dark hours of sorrow to beguile. I miss my dearest mother. I now no longer find aught half so mild as she was, so careful and so kind. Oh, I have not my father's, my noble father's arms to guard me from all wickedness and keep me safe from harms. I hear his voice no longer. I see no more his eyes smile on me in my misery. To whom now shall I fly?"
Capercaillie's song of a young woman longing for her lover, called A State of Yearning. She thinks it's an eternity until her lover returns from the high seas, but she's confident he will return and her longing will be fulfilled. As we've heard, the longing for God may well never be fulfilled this side of death. And yet St. Julian of Norwich said, "I know full well that the more the soul sees of God, the more it desires him by his grace." It's as though God allows us glimpses of him, and the blessed John Ruysbroeck described that grace which gives us those glimpses.
"Here there begins an eternal hunger, which shall never more be satisfied. It is an inward craving and hankering for the loving power and the created spirit after an uncreated good. And since the spirit longs for fruition, and is invited and urged thereto by God, it must always desire its fulfillment. Behold, now there begins an eternal craving and continual yearning in eternal insatiableness. For a created vessel cannot contain an uncreated good. And hence there is here an eternal hungry craving without satisfaction, and God poured forth above all and yet staying it not. The inward stirring and touching of God makes us hungry and yearning, for the Spirit of God hunts our spirit, and the more it touches it, the greater our hunger and our craving. And this is the life of love in its highest working, above reason and above understanding. For reason can here neither give nor take away from love, for our love is touched by the divine love."
John Ruysbroeck wrote of an eternal, hungry craving without satisfaction in the 14th century. And in the 20th century, Thomas John Carlyle said very much the same thing, describing God as the great intruder. He wrote, "It's exasperating to be called so persistently, when the last thing we want to do is get up and go. But God elects to keep on haunting, like some Holy Ghost." How frustrating it all sounds, the thought that we'll be haunted by longing until we die. But Sister Cecilia's long experience as a spiritual director and her own search for God has taught her that it need not be frustrating, that there will be times when the longing is at least partly fulfilled, and when it's not, the important thing is to keep on longing. So there could have been purpose and indeed hope in the longing and deep desire of the psalmist, who wrote, "God, God, for you my soul is thirsting, my body pines for you like a dry, weary land without water." Roxana Panufnik set that psalm to music as part of her recent Westminster Mass.